This recording is a service of the Allen County Public Library's audio reading service. It is specifically designed for and directed to people who have visual, physical, learning, or language challenges to reading traditional printed materials.
Podcast of audio reading service volunteers reading the Journal Gazette is provided by the Allen County Public Library for the sight and print impaired and made available with the permission and cooperation of the Journal Gazette.
We will now read from the Living section from the Thursday, October 2nd, Journal Gazette. And here is Chad with the horoscopes.
Horoscopes by Holiday Mathis of Creator Syndicate. Aries, March 21st to April 19th. You're willing to take things on, follow through, and own the outcomes. Responsibility signals maturity and reliability, and that naturally earns respect today. People see your capabilities, and your influence grows. Taurus, April 20th to May 20th. Joy can get blocked not by its absence, but by our own judgment of it. Don't overthink or criticize what makes you happy. It's not silly if it works for you. Second-guessing is a needless interruption of the natural flow of pleasure. Gemini, May 21st to June 21st. Your interests shift. Attractions change. Curiosities get satisfied, and then new ones spark. You're easy with it all today, allowing yourself the leeway to explore and the freedom to move along according to your timetable. Cancer, June 22nd to July 22nd. Don't worry, you're not missing the point. The point is yours to name. Sure, the journey may meander, but you always end up somewhere, and you're the only one who can decide if it was a hit or a miss. Leo, July 23rd to August 22nd. Many of the responsibilities you have were once things you wished for. Your present reality is built from past dreams. Seeing it that way transforms drudgery into appreciation. Virgo, August 23rd to September 22nd. Where many are struggling, resources of empathy, time, or money get stretched thin, and the compassion fatigue is real. Today it feels like everyone's battle is competing for limited attention. It's why your deliberate act of noticing matters so much. Libra, September 23rd to October 23rd. When you decide to do something, it's as good as done. That's why it will be wise to take your time with decisions, test them, and gather opinions from experienced folks. Your well-executed plan pays thousands. Scorpio, October 24th to November 21st. It's hard to present information without bias, but the closer you get to impartiality, the closer you get to wisdom. Today, you'll be very aware of the tension between perception, emotion, and truth. Sagittarius, November 22nd to December 21st. Sometimes you gaze into your own glory, and sometimes you avoid mirrors. These fluctuations signal health. You are leading the examined life, and therefore it is normal, necessary, and even wise to weather periods of uncertainty. Capricorn, December 22nd to January 19th. When it feels like you're existing but not quite living, you take it as a signal to push yourself to experience more. Uncomfortable? Sure. But that's also how you know you're doing it right. Aquarius, January 20th to February 18th. Honesty takes a specific kind of courage. Those inclined to please and flatter might not be up to the task. You can get directness if you ask the right people for it. Children, the elderly, and those who have nothing to lose by saying the truth. Pisces, February 19th to March 20th. Feeling angsty? Not necessarily a negative. Angst is part of your motivation and creativity. You don't need to grow out of your feelings. You're growing with them. They keep you alive to mystery and art. Today's birthday. Welcome to your year of perpetual sunniness. Your stellar attitude is perfectly matched for challenges and pleasures alike. You are drawn to acts of service that make a difference. You courageously commit to correct action and follow through. More highlights: expressions of heart, creating a special event, and contribution to the education and thriving of youth. Sagittarius and Scorpio adore you. Your lucky numbers are 12, 1, 19, 45, and 32.
To your good health. COVID vaccine's efficacy wanes with time, but it still helps. Dear Dr. Roach, my daughter was recently visiting and tested positive for COVID. Since my last COVID vaccine was 8 months ago, I searched for how much protection I still had and understood the response to be little to none. So why is the recommendation for vaccination only once per year and not more frequent so that we always have some protection? Signed, BJM. Answer. The vaccine ideally provides immunity to an infection. Many of the best vaccines that we recommend provide high-level immunity against getting the disease, although there is no such thing as a perfect vaccine. The mRNA COVID vaccines provide 85 to 90% protection for the first 3 months or so, but the immunity wanes to only 50% to 60% effectiveness against getting the disease after 6 to 8 months. The vaccine efficacy depends on the particular vaccine and precise variant of COVID. So you were right that the vaccine you got 8 months ago provides little protection against getting the disease now. However, the vaccine also protects people against severe diseases and the currently circulating variants of COVID, even if it can't protect you as well in getting the disease at all. The likelihood of hospitalization and death is decreased for much longer after vaccination, especially if a person has had multiple vaccines. This protection extends for a year and possibly longer. Getting vaccines twice yearly is not harmful and would provide more consistent and, but still not perfect, protection. But once yearly vaccination does protect against severe diseases, including hospitalization and death. People with immune systems that don't work perfectly, such as the elderly and people who are on medicines that affect the immune system, such as organ transplantation, chemotherapy, and some treatments for severe autoimmune diseases, will not respond as well to the vaccine, so they may particularly benefit from more frequent vaccination. Another option for people with severe immune system diseases is a monoclonal antibody called pemivibart, which is given by an intravenous infusion. It can be given every 3 months. Dr. Keith Roach is a King Features Advice columnist whose work appears Monday through Thursday and on Saturday. Write to Dr. Roach, 628 Virginia Drive, Orlando, Florida, 32803, or email toyourgoodhealth@med.cornell.edu.
Donations better than flowers. This is the Heloise column. Dear Heloise, regarding funeral flowers, I was a funeral director for over 40 years and can tell you that nursing homes and hospitals do not want any flowers that even remotely look like they came from a funeral, for obvious reasons. I did not have the time or vehicle to transport them elsewhere after the ceremony. To hire someone would have been an added expense. I would always suggest donations in lieu of this as an alternative. Barbara Ann Condon, Kearney, New Jersey. Dear Heloise, a reader suggested turning off your main house water supply before going on vacation. This is only if you have forced air heating. If your furnace is a water-based boiler system, hot water baseboards, radiators, etc., it automatically feeds water from your main supply. If it can't get the water, it could overheat and cause a fire. Mark Rust, via email. Dear Heloise, I'm 83 and live alone. When cooking, in order not to accidentally leave a burner on after I'm done, I turn on the stove light whenever I turn on a burner. This way, whenever I see that the stove light is on, I know the burner is hot. A reader, Vienna, West Virginia. Dear Heloise, I read the letter from Georgia N. regarding hints on what to do when traveling. I have an additional suggestion. When my husband and I travel, we always take a picture of the pickup station close to where we park our car. Then I turn around and take a picture of our car from the station to show the direction it's parked in. I also take a picture of our row number, and last of all, I take a picture of our license plate. If something happened to us on a flight, heaven forbid, people would have no idea how to find our car in a large airport parking lot without these photos. D.S., Omaha, Nebraska. Dear Heloise, when dipping pretzels in chocolate, I tried using a long, thin tine meat fork. I put the pretzels on the outside tines as long of a row as is manageable. Just dip them into your pot of melted chocolate, tilting the pot a bit to cover them completely. Then slide each pretzel off the meat fork and onto a parchment-lined cookie sheet. This saved me so much time. I could get 2 dozen mini pretzels at a time on the meat fork. Melissa McClooney, Houston, Texas. Dear Heloise, to the lady who mixes up left and right when trying to open lotion bottles, my wife also gets left and right confused sometimes. But she doesn't confuse clockwise and counterclockwise. So try remembering clockwise is lockwise. To open it, you'll have to turn it counterclockwise. Mike S., Baton Rouge, Louisiana. Heloise is a King Features Advice columnist whose work appears Mondays through Saturdays. Send a hint to Heloise@Heloise.com.
The Dear Annie column, diplomacy can help with boss. Dear Annie, I recently started a new job at a software company, and for the most part, I really like it. The only issue is my manager. She has a habit of micromanaging just about everything I do. I think she's trying to be helpful and make sure everything is done right. But it makes me feel like she doesn't trust me or my abilities, which is frustrating. I want to do well and show that I'm capable, but I also don't want to overstep or come across as ungrateful, especially since I'm still relatively new. How can I ask for more independence and space to grow without sounding like I'm pushing back against her leadership? Signed, Trying to Breathe. Dear Trying, that's a tricky line to toe, especially as a new hire. But tricky doesn't mean impossible. It just means you need to choose your wording carefully. Next time she's hovering, ask if you can take full ownership over the task at hand. Frame it as wanting to grow in your role, not push her out. If you deliver consistently, she should loosen her grip. If she doesn't, it might be time for a more direct conversation. Dear Annie, I am an 85-year-old widow living alone. I have 3 children, 5 grandchildren, and 5 great-grandchildren. In years past, when I was still driving, I would visit regularly and make it a point to stay involved. But lately, I feel the closeness we once had slipping away. For example, I sent my youngest granddaughter, a college senior, a card and check for her birthday. She replied to a text confirming she received it, but she never thanked me. I cannot help but feel resentful. Do you have any suggestions for how I can cope with these changes and find peace? Signed, Lonely Mother and Grandmother. Dear Lonely, you have poured so much love and support into your family, and it is painful when that is not acknowledged or returned. It is natural to feel disappointed, but remember that you can control that where you place your time and your energy. Continue to reach out with kindness, but avoid giving more than you are comfortable with, especially if it leaves you feeling unappreciated. Focus instead on the people who value your presence, your other children, your great-grandchildren, your friends, and your community. Seek out activities and groups that bring you companionship and joy. You have already given more than enough. Now is the time to protect your peace and allow yourself to receive the love and support that is offered to you. Annie Lane is a Creator Syndicate and advice columnist whose work appears Monday through Saturday. Send a question to DearAnnie@creators.com.
95-year-old action star's secret, quote, I never stopped. By Jake Coyle of the Associated Press. Dateline, Toronto. There are 70-year-olds who want to be like June Squibb when they grow up. Squibb, 95, wasn't the lead of a movie until she was 94. Now, a year after she turned action star in Thelma, Squibb is again the leading lady and face on the poster for Eleanor the Great, Scarlett Johansson's directorial debut. With it, Squibb is proving again that Hollywood stardom needn't belong to the young. I think a lot of that is because I never stopped, Squibb says with a chuckle, and it never occurred to me at 90 that I was supposed to say, no, I can't work anymore. Film festivals can be taxing on people half of Squibb's age. But in an interview at the Toronto International Film Festival in September, Squibb was more chipper than most. She had also traveled with the film in May for the film's debut at the Cannes Film Festival. Soon she'll begin rehearsals to star in Marjorie Prime. More than 60 years after making her Broadway debut in Gypsy, opposite Ethel Merman, Squibb is going back to Broadway. "I just thought, I really want to do this," says Squibb, who last performed on Broadway in 2018 in Waitress. "I want to go back." That such things are possible for an actor in her mid-90s goes against every convention of show business, not to mention most other professions. But since her breakthrough Oscar-nominated performance in Alexander Payne's Nebraska, 2013, Squibb has enjoyed the richest acting run of her life, despite being well past what most consider retirement age. How does she have the energy? "I don't know either," she says, laughing and shaking her head. "I just gird my loins and go. If I stopped, I probably wouldn't start again." After a lifetime of auditions, Squibb hasn't had to try out for a role since Nebraska. For an Illinois native who didn't act in her first film until age 60, Woody Allen's Alice, her late-in-life surge has been a long-in-coming validation. "It gives you a sense of, well, they really know who I am now," says Squibb. In Eleanor the Great, which is in theaters now, that's especially true. She plays Eleanor, a woman who, after the death of her best friend, Rita Zohar, moves in with her daughter, Jessica Hecht, in New York. A little accidentally, but also out of grief and to impress a young friend, Aaron Kellyman, Eleanor adopts her deceased friend's Holocaust survivor history. The role is a showcase for Squibb's unfiltered, tart-tongued comic talent, as well as her capacity for something more painful and dramatic. For Johansson, giving Squibb the part and seeing the reception for her in Cannes was the main reason for making the movie. "I will never forget the audience reaction, and June's reaction to the audience's reaction," Johansson says. "Maybe my way of processing it, too, is through June. It makes it less personal because it's hard for me to absorb it all. But something I'll never forget is holding June in that moment." Squibb, who converted to Judaism in the 1950s, is especially fond of Eleanor. It's a role that casts her back to her own childhood, growing up during World War II. "When news began to spread about the concentration camps," she says, "I remember how horrified we were." Squibb receives so many scripts for potential roles that she's grown quite picky. Some of that is out of necessity. "Do I have to run across the room? Forget it," says Squibb. "I have to say no." But doing anything new is appealing to her. She voices a character in the upcoming Disney animation Zootopia 2. When Ryan Murphy reached out about a role in American Horror Story episode last year, it meant traveling from Los Angeles to New Jersey for a day. But she couldn't say no. "It was crazy. I was the grandmother of a coven of leprechauns who drink blood," Squibb says, "and I just thought, well, I have to do this." It's enough to make you wonder what challenge is left for Squibb to conquer. She has one idea. "I was doing an interview with Alexander Payne for Thelma, and he said, 'Okay, June, what do you want to do next?' And I said, 'A Western,'" Squibb says. "And he said, 'I'm writing a Western. I'll put you in.' I used to ride when I was a kid. I think if you got me on the horse, I could probably still do it, but maybe not. So it might be like a bordello keep." Squibb smiles. "I like that idea because it's something I've never done."
We will now read the perspective section for Thursday, October 2nd. The opinions expressed are those of the writers and not necessarily the opinions of the Audio Reading Service, the Allen County Public Library, Northeast Indiana Public Radio, PBS Fort Wayne, or your readers, Mike or
Chad.
Now, here's Chad with the first item.
Letters to the Editor. Kindness Paid Forward by Kay Miller of Fort Wayne. I wish to express my deepest appreciation to the very kind lady who so generously paid the entire bill for the groceries I purchased from the Meyer store on Illinois Road on September 5th. I also want her to know I have already paid the entire amount forward to a very deserving individual. Signed, Kay Miller, Fort Wayne. Fears of fascism are far overblown. William Dillon, Hamilton. I am an 81-year-old retired educator, and I was deeply affected by the September 10th op-ed from retired attorney Jim Boglin. His piece was a call for good citizens to be prepared to repel the efforts of a cabal of fascists who have gained control over much of the machinery of governance. Boglin did an excellent job of defining textbook fascism. Unfortunately, he parallels the experience of post-World War I Germany and Italy to the current climate in our nation. The situation in Germany, particularly after the passage of the Treaty of Versailles, was deplorable. Germany was forced to accept total responsibility for the war and was severely punished for it. In hindsight, it is easy to see how a fascist culture could arise there and where an Adolf Hitler could achieve control of the nation. That is hardly the case in contemporary America. Certainly, we have serious problems, but nothing like that. Fascists in America are loners, living their resentment in log cabins away from populations, a la Ted Kaczynski, whose anarchism displayed elements of fascist thinking. A better example of a right-winger so concerning to Boglin, tragically, is Charlie Kirk. Kirk stepped into the lion's den, as it were, at college campuses, where he was often attacked and even shunned. Kirk was a conservative, a Christian, unafraid to defend his faith, pro-life, and a family man who stated that his family was by far the most important thing in his life. He loved our country and felt its best days were still ahead of us. In short, he was philosophically and theologically very much like me and most of my contemporaries. My advice to Boglin and all those on the left is to relax. Donald Trump will leave office at the end of this term, and our democracy will survive at least until the far left is able to reinstitute a borderless America with free stuff for all. Signed, William Dillon, Hamilton. Memories of Gregory continue to bring joy. Francie Zucco, Fort Wayne. When Ron Gregory passed from this earth on August 21st, he left behind a multitude of sad but relieved friends, relieved that he was finally free of the pain he had endured for so long. We can all still hear his uproarious laugh. He told jokes, and if truth be told, might have stolen a few, only to repeat them in a much more hilarious manner. His oh-so-identifiable voice would be recognized by fans whenever he was hanging out with friends. Additionally, he became an instant friend to anyone who rhetorically asked, "Aren't you Ron Gregory from WoWo?" Many Fort Wayne fans may not know Ron was an excellent musician with encyclopedic knowledge of drums, as well as famous drummers from the big band era. He had fun playing, and we had many laughs with him. So long, friend. Fly high. Signed, Francie Zucco, Fort Wayne.
In editorials, there's a two-part editorial. First, new designations reflect the pros of preservation. Historic preservation is vital for maintaining a community's identity, prosperity, and connection to its past. By safeguarding architecturally and culturally significant buildings and neighborhoods, preservation ensures that unique character is not lost to homogenized development. Over the past few months, the St. Joseph's Nurses Home and two districts, the Kirkwood Park neighborhood and a portion of East Breckenridge Street, have been added to the National Register of Historic Places. Such a designation could qualify for properties for historic tax credits or grant funding offered through the state or federal government. The St. Joseph's Nurses Home, 835 Van Buren Street, was constructed in 1928 and expanded in 1945. It is a physical record of the evolution of the nursing profession and a remaining piece of what was part of the old St. Joseph Hospital campus. The building, close to the Lutheran Downtown Hospital, will offer 39 residential apartments. It took about 2 years to get recognized by the National Register, said Nate Lefevre, a historic preservation and culture planner with the city. The Pennsylvania Produce Terminal Historic District, a commercial warehouse cluster within the East Central neighborhood that includes MKM Architecture and Design, earned National Register recognition this month. Located in the 400 block of East Breckenridge, it was built in 1929 as four produce warehouses combined into one unit. And in June, the Kirkwood neighborhood in northeast Fort Wayne was granted inclusion in the National Register. The district contains more than 150 mid-sized homes and a park. Kirkwood Park President Laura Stronzek told the Journal Gazette in June, the idea to pursue historic designation came from the neighborhood's desire to stop a cell tower from being constructed in a homeowner's yard. The neighborhood reflects the need for middle-class housing that developed after World War II and the trend for suburban development with amenities, such as larger lots and the large park located in the center of the development, a news release said. Economically, historic preservation is a powerful driver for revitalization, attracting tourism, stabilizing property values, and creating local jobs through renovation projects that often require specialized craftsmanship. Furthermore, it promotes environmental sustainability by reusing existing structures, conserving resources. Preservation is not just about nostalgia. It's a forward-looking strategy that promotes sustainable growth, economic vitality, and a richer quality of life for all residents. And the second editorial, Farmageddon looms over soybean exports. China has pivoted from purchasing U.S. soybeans to acquiring them from suppliers in Brazil and Argentina, leaving many American farmers in the cold and clamoring for a federal bailout. The dramatic shift echoes Beijing's responses to the tariff war during President Donald Trump's first term, when the value of U.S. soybean exports plunged $3.1 billion in 2018 from $14 billion in 2016. Last week, Trump said he plans to use tariff revenue for cash bailouts to farmers. That will require congressional approval, and aid likely won't reach farms until early 2026. The need, however, is obvious, as the retaliatory tariff Beijing imposed on U.S. imports hasn't just pounded soybean producers. All agricultural exports to China were down 53% in the first 7 months of this year, compared with the same period in 2024, according to the Department of Agriculture data. Indiana's estimated 2025 soybean harvest is about 332.4 million bushels, according to the latest available reports. Nationally, total farm debt is on track to hit a record $561.8 billion this year, according to a September report by the USDA. Without federal intervention, lawmakers and agricultural groups fear the situation could escalate into a wider farm crisis. Analysts from Taxpayers for Common Sense, as well as the Environmental Working Group, argue that most commodity subsidies disproportionately benefit large, wealthy farms. They note that the top 10% of farms received nearly 80% of commodity payments between 1995 and 2024. The USDA has already issued some direct economic assistance this year to mitigate rising input costs and falling prices. Congress might not have a choice but to approve another farm bailout, only this time it should focus on family farms as opposed to corporate entities. The effective boycott of the U.S. soybean industry at the height of the September harvest season suggests more than just a tit-for-tat import curb. The Midwestern soybean-producing states of Illinois, Indiana, Iowa, Minnesota, and Nebraska are a key political constituency for the Republican Party in the run-up to congressional midterm elections next year. If lawmakers don't pony up more payments, farmers face significant uncertainty as they head into 2026. Many would feel abandoned as they deal with what some are calling Farmageddon.
ICE display of dominance must not cow Chicago. A Chicago Tribune editorial. A beautiful early fall weekend in downtown Chicago. Sun-splashed lakefront. Families enjoying the museums and city sights. Packs of men in military fatigues carrying high-powered long guns and seemingly stopping people based on the color of their skin. Which of those images doesn't belong? On Sunday, Immigration and Customs Enforcement agents made a performative show of transforming an otherwise peaceful downtown into something out of a bad movie. And for what? Why? Gregory Bovino, the chief patrol agent for the weeks-long Chicago operation, didn't substantively answer questions posed to him Sunday by journalists on the scene. But we think we understand what was at work. We believe this was essentially a provocation, a response to sharp criticism from Governor J.B. Pritzker and Mayor Brandon Johnson, and a blunt demonstration of the truth that our state and local politicians essentially have no say over where these federal agents choose to go in search of people in the country illegally. If so, mission accomplished. In Donald Trump, Americans elected a president who was as clear as he could be about his immigration agenda and promised mass deportations. No one should be surprised. We've seen multiple instances of ICE asserting that detainees had criminal records, and when reporters research records, they find no corroboration. If ICE is going to justify its aggressive tactics by saying it's focusing on illegal immigrants with criminal records, then the agency should provide documentation of such contentions. That's the standard that applies to local law enforcement. Indeed, it applies to other federal law enforcement agencies, and it's not too much to ask of ICE. There's a reason ICE representatives keep saying their primary aim is to remove illegal immigrants with criminal records. Polls show that's what a majority of Americans want from ICE, rather than actions targeting those in the country illegally, regardless of whether, in every other respect, they've been law-abiding, productive taxpayers, potentially for decades. Blue cities such as Chicago aren't the only places where this point of view is common. We've seen reports of more than one instance of rural communities in Republican states banding together to protest detainment of longtime residents. It's in the agency's own interest, at least in terms of its public standing, to show its receipts regarding assertions of criminal backgrounds. Meanwhile, a jarring show of force was hardly in furtherance of the stated goals. We agree with Pritzker, who posted on X, "It's a show of intimidation, instilling fear in our communities and hurting our businesses." More conservative voices within the Democratic Party tent echoed the governor. "It looks un-American," Alderman Brendan Riley, whose 42nd ward includes parts of downtown, said on Monday. "This is not helping anybody." This is usually one of the best times of the year in Chicago. The weather typically is beautiful. Football season is well underway, and the city shines. Even if dozens of heavily armed immigration enforcers have the legal right to patrol Chicago's most heavily visited areas hunting for quarry, that doesn't mean they should.
And now, primetime TV listings for Thursday, October 2nd. Beginning with CBS, 8 p.m., Elsbeth. At 9 p.m., another Elsbeth. And at 10, a third Elsbeth. ABC, 8 p.m., 911. 9 p.m., another edition of 911. And at 10 p.m., a third edition of 911. NBC, 8 p.m., Law and Order. 9 p.m., Law and Order Special Victims Unit. 10 p.m., Law and Order Organized Crime. PBS, 8 p.m., This Old House. 8:30, Ask This Old House. 9, Fort Wayne Memories, the 40s. 10 p.m., Short Films. And 10:30, This Old House. Fox, 8 p.m., Hell's Kitchen. 9 p.m., Special Forces, World's Toughest Test. And 10 p.m., Fox 55, News First at 10. We're going to read a few local sports highlights next. But if you love sports, tune in Mondays at 1:30 and 10:30 p.m. and Tuesdays at 6 a.m. for Spotlight on Sports with stories from Sports Illustrated magazine. Or tune in every Sunday afternoon at 4:30 p.m. and Monday mornings at 6 a.m. and listen to a full hour of the past week's local, regional, and national sports stories during Sports in Review. And now, Chad will start with the first local sports highlight.
Baseball playoffs. Padres quiet Cubs to force Game 3. San Diego over Chicago, 3-0. Padres hold Chicago to just 4 hits as Penn dominates. By Jay Cohen of the Associated Press. Dateline, Chicago. Manny Machado hit a 2-run homer. Mason Miller dominated again, and the San Diego Padres beat the Chicago Cubs 3-0 on Wednesday, sending their NL wildcard series to a decisive third game. Former Tin Cap star Jackson Merrill hit an early sacrifice fly, as San Diego avoided elimination after losing 3-1 on Tuesday. Dylan Cease struck out 5 in 3 2/3 innings before handing the ball to his team's hard-throwing bullpen. "That's what postseason is about, man," Mikado said. "It's a beautiful thing to be playing here in front of these crowds and with what's at stake." The finale of the Best of Three series is back at Wrigley Field today. Yu Darvish gets the ball for San Diego today, and Jameson Taillon starts for Chicago. Darvish played for the Cubs for 3 seasons before he was traded to the Padres in December 2020, and he enjoys pitching at Wrigley. "This place did me good," he said through a translator. "The organization, the fans did me good, too."
And in another MLB game, playoff game, Guardians score 5-8 to draw even with Tigers. By Joe Reedy, Associated Press, Dateline Cleveland. Rocktober has returned to Cleveland. Brian Rocchio came up with another clutch hit in the postseason with the go-ahead homer in the 8th inning as the Cleveland Guardians even their AL wildcard series against the Detroit Tigers with a 6-1 victory in Game 2 on Wednesday. It was huge, an 0-2 count, and he was ready to fire, manager Stephen Vaught said of Rocchio's blast. "For us, it was a frustrating day offensively for us. 2 hits leading into the 8th. For our guys to explode and get separation felt good." Bo Naylor also went deep in the 8th, and the Guardians put up 5 runs to take control of the game. George Valera also homered to force a deciding game in the best of 3 series. The winner today faces the Seattle Mariners in a division series. No team has lost Game 1 of a wildcard series and advanced since the expanded rounds began in 2022. Javier Baez had 2 hits and an RBI for the Tigers, who were 1-for-15 with runners in scoring position and stranded 15 runners. Detroit right-hand pitcher Jack Flaherty, 8-15, 4.64 ERA, makes his 8th postseason start today. And Cleveland right-hand pitcher Slade Ciccone, 7-7 with 4.30 ERA, gets his first.
Continuing in baseball playoffs, Yankees edge Red Sox to force deciding game. New York over Boston, 4-3. By Mike Fitzpatrick of the Associated Press. Dateline New York. Jazz Chisholm Jr. zipped all the way home from first base on Austin Wells' tie-breaking single in the 8th inning, and the New York Yankees extended their season Wednesday night with a 4-3 victory over the Boston Red Sox in Game 2 of their AL wildcard series. Unhappy he was left out of the starting lineup in the opener, Chisholm also made a couple of critical defensive plays at second base that helped the Yankees send the best-of-three playoff to a decisive Game 3 tonight in the Bronx. In the latest chapter of baseball's most storied rivalry, the winner advances to face AL East champion Toronto in a best-of-five division series beginning Saturday. Up next, hard-throwing rookie Cam Schlittler, 4-3, 2.96 ERA, starts Game 3 for New York. The 24-year-old right-hander grew up in Boston, where he attended Northeastern University, but has said he always wanted to play for the Yankees. Rookie left-hander Connelly Early, 1-2, 2.33 ERA, will pitch for Boston in place of injured Lucas Giolito. Early has made 4 major league starts since his debut on September 9th.
In tennis sectionals, Spartans sweep Generals while Knights nip Cavs. By Victoria Jacobson, the Journal Gazette. It only took half an hour for Homestead to knock out Wayne in the sectional tennis semifinals Wednesday. But long after the Spartans and Generals had headed home, 2 hours and 15 minutes after matches started at Homestead's Jimmy Clark Tennis Complex, Quinn Young of Bishop Lures finally bested Canterbury's Grayson Achenbach in a 3-set thriller at number 3 singles to clinch a 3-2 victory and send the Knights through to the sectional finals. Number 2 Homestead, 20-1, and Bishop Lures, 17-3, will play for the Homestead sectional title at 4:30 p.m. today.
WNBA Finals. Aces chase third title in 4 years. by Doug Feinberg of the Associated Press. Aja Wilson and the Las Vegas Aces are looking to accomplish something only done once before by winning a third WNBA championship in four seasons. Standing in the way are the Phoenix Mercury, who are making their first championship appearance since 2021. The WNBA Finals will begin Friday in Las Vegas between the second-seeded Aces and number 4-seed Mercury. This year, for the first time, the two teams will play in a best-of-seven format as the league expanded its championship round from a five-game series.
And in a sports brief, Comets are bringing back Smerik. Put together by a Journal Gazette staff and news services. With the start of training camp less than a week away, the Comets made one more big signing to strengthen their blue line. Veteran defenseman Jalen Smerik will return to where he made his ECHL debut after signing with Fort Wayne on Wednesday. Smerik spent last season with the Toledo Walleye, helping his team take down the Comets in the Central Division Finals and reach the Kelly Cup Finals. He had 8 goals with 38 assists in the regular season, adding 14 points, 3 goals, and 11 assists in the postseason. Before his stint in Toledo, Smerik had back-to-back seasons with at least 50 points with the Cincinnati Cyclones. The 28-year-old from Detroit has played 252 career games in the ECHL, as well as 77 AHL games and a season in the Deutsche Eishockey Liga in Germany. The Comets open preseason camp on Monday and play their lone preseason game at 2 p.m. October 12th against the Iowa Heartlanders at Trine.
Atlantic Division Preview. Florida still the finest in a dominant division. By John Warau of the Associated Press. Of the NHL's four divisions, the Atlantic has stood above all recently, and that is not going to change this year if the three-peat-minded Florida Panthers have their say. No matter how many games, 314 including playoffs, the two-time defending champs have logged, making three straight Stanley Cup final appearances, or the loss of captain Alexander Barkov to a season-ending injury, forward Sam Reinhart has faith Florida is bigger than the sum of its parts. "It's a team in every sense," Reinhart said. "I think just the trust in each other and the confidence that comes when the moment comes to us, we're going to be prepared to play our game." The band, including Brad Marchand, is mostly back in South Florida, minus Barkov and with Matthew Tkachuk, out until December after surgery to repair a sports hernia and torn adductor muscle. And the Cup familiarity runs through Florida, after the Panthers displaced the two-time Cup-winning Tampa Bay Lightning, who won titles in 2020 and 21 before losing to Colorado in 22. Predicted finish? Toronto, Tampa Bay, Montreal, Florida, Ottawa, Buffalo, Detroit, and Boston.
This concludes the reading of the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette. The Journal Gazette is broadcast every weekday at 9 a.m. and 6 p.m. Today, Thursday, October 2nd, we are sending birthday greetings to Internet listener Sam D. in Westchester, Pennsylvania. We're sure there are other birthdays today, and if it is your birthday, we wish you a happy day as well. Your readers today have been Mike with
Chad.
We invite you to stay tuned for the next program.
You've been listening to Volunteers Read the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette, which is broadcast every weekday at 9 a.m. and rebroadcast at 6 p.m. and 3 a.m. Check out our podcast of the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette and obituaries on our podcast page at audioreadingservicepodcast.com. Thank you for listening, and if you have any questions, please give us a call at 260-421-1376.